Hey, Leo here for Ashlized.org. And in this episode, I'm going to be talking about what is the devil? Understanding the mechanics of evil. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. A quote from Christ. I need to issue a warning right off the bat, which is that this episode may offend and disturb you. I've gotten death threats in the past for speaking about some of the material that needs to be covered here today on this topic, and that's for good reason, because here we are stabbing the ego right in the heart. This is not what most people want. Most people's lives are, in fact, designed around never understanding what is meant to be understood here. So be careful. But also, get excited, because if something is that deeply offensive and disturbing, it also probably means that there's a lot of growth to be had there if you become conscious of it. What I want to help you do in this episode is to reconcile evil once and for all in your life, so that you understand what it is and why it is, at the biggest picture possible, in the most holistic way. Very few people in life have done this. So what we're going to be doing in this episode is answering some age-old philosophical and theological questions, but in a practical way, that have to do with morality and ethics and evil. So questions like, what is the devil? We're going to answer that. What is evil? We're going to answer that. Why does evil exist? And how is it created? What's the mechanics of it? We're going to answer that. We're going to answer the question of, if there is a benevolent God, how could a benevolent God allow for evil to exist? If God is all good and all powerful, then there's this paradox of evil that we have to contend with. How do we explain that? And we're going to answer the question of, how do you stop evil once and for all? So those are our questions. Now, this issue of reconciling evil, it's important for two reasons. One, it's important for your peace of mind and your happiness. Because if there's a lot of evil around you in the world, and it's happening to you and around you, and you don't understand what it is, or you misunderstand what it is, then you're always going to be perturbed. How can you be happy? How can you be at peace in a world where all this stuff is happening when you don't understand it? And secondly, and perhaps even more importantly, is that if you misunderstand evil, you will unwittingly create evil. And that actually is the primary reason why there is so much evil in the world, is simply because people have the wrong understanding of what it is, thereby actually creating it. So let's get started. Let's just get right into the heart of the issue, which is, what is the devil? Do you want to know? Do you really want to know? Are you sure you want to know? It's you. You are the devil. It's as simple as that. If you take away one thing from this episode, let it be this. The devil is not some guy with horns and a pitchfork and a pointy tail and red skin. That is a metaphor. That is a metaphor from Christian mythology, let's say. But I don't even know if they talk about the appearance of the devil in the Bible. I don't think so. That's just something that our culture has sort of come up with. But that's a caricature. That's a cartoon version of what the devil is. That's a metaphor for what? For you. For the self. For the ego. Evil is basically just selfishness, which is the same thing as ignorance, which is the same thing as unconsciousness. Now, of course, the devil works in sneaky and deceptive ways. The devil uses illusion and sleight of hand. So to this end, of course, the devil must deny that he is the devil. Because if the devil ever realized that he was the devil, he would have to stop being the devil. So fundamentally, the mechanic of being a devil is that you behave like a devil while saying that you are good. That's what the devil does. Actually, that part of the Christian devil mythology is quite right. In Christian mythology, they always talk about the devil as being the sort of trickster character who promises you one thing and then gives you something else. Well, that's exactly right. The devil works through deception. And not just deceiving you in the sense that there's some external agent, like a guy with a pitchfork, who deceives you. That's not what we are talking about here. I'm saying that you are the devil. You deceive yourself. And by that very deception, you come into existence as a self. And from that dynamic comes all the evil in the world that you know and love, that we commonly recognize from history, from all the history books. Torture, rape, murder, war, terrorism, genocide, racism, slavery, pedophilia, whatever. You name it. Every abuse imaginable. What is that but selfishness? That's what it is. Here's the thing about the self and about you, is that you have to understand how you came into existence to really understand this topic. And the problem is that most people think they came into existence by being born. That is not how you came into existence. Most people think that they are a physical object, like a human being is a physical object. Human being is not a physical object. A human being is a concept. You are a concept. To understand this is, again, just regular old non-duality, so if you've heard me talk about this before, then we're just going to rehash it here. But for those of you who are new, and you know, some people who have heard it, they still don't get it. Here's what non-duality means, is that you just have one substance out of which everything is made. In this substance, there is no distinction between a subject and an object, a self and another. These things don't exist yet. It's all one. Then what happens is that, let's say we want a self. How do you get a self? Are you just born? No. When you're born, you don't have a self. You're alive, but no self yet. The self comes into existence when? When a distinction is drawn between self and other. In other words, there are no objects in reality. Scientifically, objectively speaking, there's not a single object. It's all one. There are no boundaries. But you can draw boundaries if you want to, and then you can believe in those boundaries. So what would happen if we drew a boundary? Imagine a white piece of paper, we have a Sharpie, big fat black Sharpie, and we just draw a circle. So as we're drawing that circle, we're creating a boundary. And then what we do is we tell ourselves, okay, everything inside the boundary is me, is the self, that's my identity. And everything outside the boundary, that's the environment, that's the other. That's reality, that's God, that's science, that's the universe. We have all these different names for what the other is. It includes, of course, human beings, but it also includes physical objects, the external world, all that sort of stuff. Inside the bubble, inside the circle is me, the self. Now, of course, as soon as I do that, there's a problem. My entire existence is based on the creation of this boundary. And the maintaining of this boundary. See, if someone comes along with an eraser, tries to erase this line, I will literally disappear. That's what it means for you to be a concept. I'm saying that you will disappear if the boundary of you and other is erased. And you can erase it, which is precisely why you fight so much to stay yourself, which is precisely why you defend yourself. You defend your self-image. You not only defend yourself physically, you defend yourself conceptually as well. You defend all your ideas, your beliefs, various ideological systems that you have, your notions of reality. You defend various rights and values and ideals that you hold. And of course, you defend yourself physically. And you just defend yourself from all sorts of forms of abuse, from theft, from rape, from murder, from getting screwed over in a business deal, from getting screwed over in a relationship, from not getting the short end of the stick, for getting the kind of food you want, right? See, it just goes on and on. Your entire life is about this. To be alive is to be a thing which tries to survive as a self. You could imagine it as though we take a water balloon and we fill it with water. And now we have this water balloon. That is you. That's the self. Now, of course, the problem is that, yes, you do have a shape. It's flexible, but generally you have a certain kind of shape, which makes it seem as though you're distinct from your environment. But, of course, you're also very vulnerable to your environment as a self, because this water balloon can be very easily punctured. A pencil, some scissors, a knife, some sharp coffee table corner could puncture this fragile membrane of the water balloon. So what does the water balloon have to do if it wants to survive as a water balloon? Because you see, reality is a chaotic thing, chaotic system. There's a lot of variability. There's a lot of chaos. You can get burned. You can get stabbed. You can get frozen. I mean, you can get shot out into outer space. All sorts of bad stuff could happen to you if you are dead set on staying yourself. If you don't care about staying yourself, then it's not a problem. But if you care about maintaining this fixed configuration of matter and energy or whatever it is, this water balloon, if you want it to stay unpunctured, then you have a lot of defending to do. And that's exactly what the self is about. And that's exactly how the devil is created. See, the devil creates evil simply because it exists as a self and he needs to act to preserve itself. And the easiest way to do that is to be extremely, extremely, extremely selfish. Because when you're extremely selfish, what you'll do is you will take every single obstacle or threat to your existence in the environment and you will label it as being evil or bad. And that's true from your point of view. Because if all you care about is self-survival and your own persistence and your own reproduction and your own thriving and your own pleasure and happiness, if you care about those things above everything else, then you don't care what the truth of the matter is. You don't care about non-duality. What you care about is just maintaining your configuration. And the best way to do that is to demonize those things which are really threatening to you. So, evil is the label or the concept that you invented in order to marginalize those things which are threatening to your existence so that you could justify to yourself eliminating those things without any self-reflection or any guilt. See? And this notion of evil you have is completely relative. It's relative to you. It's relative to your survival. Consider that if you had no self, you literally would not see evil, and that it literally would not exist. This is a hard pill for people to swallow. It's hard for people to wrap their minds around this. I see this consistently by reading people's comments about these topics. Because they have this feeling that evil is some tangible property out in the world, in the same way that length or weight or color, like the color red, is a property of the world. They think that evil is a property of certain people or of certain situations or certain things. That's not the case at all. Evil is a concept that was invented by the self, by the devil, so that he could be a devil without admitting to himself that he's the devil. And when you understand that, you immediately start to see why there are so many devils in the world. The devil is not out there, the devil is in you. When you get in touch and you become conscious of the devil within you, and you recognize just how powerful of a force this is, it's a force of nature which is very difficult to stop, you will then appreciate and understand why other people are acting like devils. And you will not really blame them or condemn them for being devils, because you understand that you're also a devil, and that there's really very little difference between you two. This is something that nobody wants to admit, because the whole point of having a self is to be selfish. It's to have a self agenda. It's to be very self-biased, to have a double standard. Have you noticed that when other people act excessively selfishly, you are very quick to call it evil, and others around you are very quick to condemn that person for being so selfish? But when they themselves, or you yourself, are being selfish, that's completely ignored. That's not important. Let's not look at that. Let's point our finger at the one who is being a devil, the one outside. And that dynamic right there is exactly what the devil does. That is how devilry works. It works ass backwards. It's tricky. It's deceptive. It's the most counterintuitive thing ever. Think of the most evil thing you can imagine. Maybe slavery, maybe genocide, maybe torture and rape, maybe war. And notice that these things are not evil in an absolute sense. They're only evil for you. Now, this is where people stumble. Is they say, well, Leo, for me, it's not just for me. Like Nazis, they're not just evil for me. Nazis are evil for everybody. Terrorists are evil for everybody. No, they're not. This notion of for you, it's a much broader notion than you're thinking. I don't just mean Nazis are evil for you in the sense that they can harm you physically, and maybe they could even dismantle your entire country if you let them. There's more to it than that. Because your sense of evil for me doesn't just include you personally. It includes your family, your social circle, your country, your tribe. It includes all your ideas. It includes your entire identity. It includes all your values of justice, goodness, and liberty, and beauty, and truth, and love. It includes all of that. So in that sense, Nazis are evil for you because they go against the things that you hold as most dear. But Nazis are not evil to themselves. And terrorists are not evil to themselves. And there are many people who support terrorists doing what they do. Why is that? Is it because they're also evil? No. It's because they have a different agenda. That's the difference. It's a difference of agenda, not a difference of any kind of physical properties or characteristics. You have to start to see that everyone in the world is acting basically the same. They're acting in a self-biased manner to accomplish their own agenda. That's what 99.999% of people in the world are up to. And that's why we have so much evil in the world. It's really just as simple as that. The problem is that you don't want to admit it. You do dozens of evil things every single day, but you're ignorant of them. Evil is ignorance. And of course you're going to deny it, because the first thing the devil does when he comes into existence is that he says that he is good. He is true. He has to play that game on himself in order to feel like he's real, like he's solid. Now, I hear you saying, well, Leo, but you're equating me with Nazis. I'm not a Nazi, and I'm better than a Nazi. Why are you trying to put us on the same playing field? Precisely because what the devil needs to do to maintain himself as a devil is to skew the playing field. See, what the ego likes to do is it likes to make very fine distinctions. And it says, well, but I'm not as bad as a rapist, and I'm not as bad as a terrorist, and I'm not as bad as a Nazi. And that's exactly what perpetuates the evil and the blindness within you, which will cause you to create more evil. See? It's true that different people have different degrees of ignorance and unconsciousness and selfishness. Not everybody is equally selfish. And it manifests in many different ways. But the very important point to understand is that there's no fundamental difference between you and a Nazi or a terrorist or whoever you hate. There's no difference at all. It's just a difference of circumstance. It's a difference of degree. And really, the difference is much smaller than you think. A Nazi is maybe 1% conscious. You are maybe 2% conscious. That's the difference. The difference is 1% consciousness. That's what most people don't understand. And that there's a lot of room for growth there on that scale. Huge room for growth. See, the devil is really good at ignoring the collateral damage that he causes. People think that evil happens through diabolical planning. Usually it doesn't. Sometimes it does, but usually it doesn't. Usually it just happens, well, like this. Let me give you an example. This example is the Iraq War. This is a very good example. If you ask most Americans, what's the most evil thing you can think of? One of the things they might cite as an example is 9/11. And they might say, well, 9/11 is one of the most evil acts perpetrated upon the American public in the last 50 years, let's say, since the Nazis, perhaps, since the concentration camps. Okay. And how many people died in September 11th? 2,500 people, roughly speaking. Okay. After 9/11, George W. Bush holds a famous news conference where he talks about the axis of evil. In the axis of evil, who does he call out? Iran, Iraq, and North Korea. Then, shortly after, we invade Iraq under the pretense of weapons of mass destruction. And although there's no connection whatsoever between Iraq and 9/11, still, the public is in this sort of combative mood, and we want to be tough on terrorists and dictators and evildoers. Evildoers, that's a very popular quote for George W. Evildoers. And how does he frame this war? He frames the war as us fighting evil. So we're the good guys, they're the bad guys, we are making the world safer, we're fighting for freedom, we're fighting for democracy, we're fighting for enlightenment, we're fighting for American values, all that's good in the world. And I say this as an American, I'm an American citizen. So it's very interesting, right? Then we go to war with Iraq, and what happens? A lot of people die. How many? Let's pull it up. Here's my phone. I'm going to go to Google and type in casualties of the Iraq War. And I'm going to click on the first thing that comes up, which is a Wikipedia page, casualties of the Iraq War. And I'll quote you a little bit of it. Here's what it says. Various scientific surveys of Iraqi deaths resulting from the first 4 years of the Iraq War are estimated up to 1 million Iraqis died as a result of the conflict during this time. Another study published in 2011 estimated that it's approximately 500,000 Iraqis. Another newspaper who has been calculating these tallies called the Iraqi Body Count Project found that 174,000 Iraqis were killed. And of those, approximately 120,000 were civilian noncombatants. So, Americans were pissed off when we lost 2,500 people. And yet, then we invade a country who had nothing to do with that, and we kill at least 120,000 civilian noncombatants. And how do we justify it? Well, we ignore it. This figure is virtually never cited in the news or in mainstream culture. Never brought up. In fact, the Defense Department doesn't even bother keeping accurate count of the casualties. That's not something they're interested in, you see. We keep very accurate count of our own casualties. And granted, it's easier to keep count of your own casualties than those of the opposite side. But still, there is a sort of willful ignorance there. For good reason. Because if you were fully conscious of what you were doing when you were waging this war from the highest level, then you could not wage this war. See? Because this is just the committing of evil. That's what it is. But it gets even sneakier than this. See, now let me take my own responsibility for this, because I'm an American citizen. I pay U.S. taxes. I pay over $100,000 in taxes every single year. Where does that money go? To the federal government. To fund our defense industry. To fund these wars. The Iraq War is estimated to have cost at least $1 trillion taxpayer dollars. And that's a very conservative estimate. Some estimates put it at $2, $3, or even $4 trillion when you take into account all the ancillary costs, the interest rates, and all the collateral damage that's been done that needs to be repaired, and all the disabled veterans that need to be taken care of for 50 years into the future, dealing with post-traumatic stress, dealing with amputations, dealing with all this sort of stuff, you see. So enormous cost. And I funded that because I'm an American citizen. I funded evil. If you're an American citizen, you funded evil. If you do business with America through trade, you also funded evil. You see, if your country was part of the coalition that invaded Iraq, which included the UK, Australia, and like a couple dozen other countries, they sent in very small numbers of troops, but nevertheless, you participated in that evil. And see, if you're a taxpayer in those countries, you also funded this evil. And yet, you don't think of it as such, do you? How much time in the last 10 years have you thought, have you spent thinking about this? Very, very little. Of course. And that's precisely how evil gets created. You don't understand you're creating it because you're deeply, deeply ignorant and you're in denial about it. And it's not pleasant to talk about these things at the dinner table or on TV or even in the news. Even the news doesn't cover this stuff, really. It's extremely biased. It's extremely selfish. As you would expect, because not only is there an individual ego, there's a collective ego. The entire nation of America is an ego structure, in a sense, really. And it fights to preserve itself. It's selfish. It's got a self-bias. It's got a self-agenda. Of course it does. As does every other nation. As does every other tribe. Every sports team. Every corporation. Every family. Every couple. It works like this. But also the individual contributes to it. And there's an interplay between the individual and the collective. So that was one example. Here's another example for you that a lot of people are in denial about. Smartphones. Do you own a smartphone? If you do, if you own an iPhone, for example, this is not an iPhone, but if you own an iPhone, and I mean, I assume that the same basic manufacturing principles apply to any phone, not just the iPhone, but they're manufactured in China using very cheap labor, making these people work in factories for 60, 80 hours a week. Many of them are under miserable conditions. Some of them are worked to death. They actually have to install nets under the windows and in the staircases of these factories because people will jump out and commit suicide because of the miserable conditions in which they manufacture these phones. It's just a very tedious process, very robotic process, mind-numbing, life-numbing. And yet you go out there and buy a new phone every year. And you love your phone. And you just obliviously text away on your phone, not realizing that that purchase created that evil. See? And what is that? That's just ignorance. That's just selfishness. You want your phone. Even when I tell you this, you're still going to keep using your phone. It doesn't matter. You're going to continue to use it because you have a double standard, because that's what the ego is about. And that's how evil is committed. What I'm telling you is that fundamentally there's no difference between the Iraq War, between the iPhone, between a lot of other stuff like that, between Wall Street, and between Nazis and terrorists. There's really very little difference when you look at the fundamentals of it, when you look at the mechanics of it. The content is different. But otherwise, no, you're just kidding yourself. Evil has a function. The function of ego of evil is to serve the ego. It's a concept that the ego created so that you can point to something out there and call it evil and never have to really self-reflect about your relationship to that thing. You never have to adopt the perspective of that person or of that ideology. You never have to step in that person's shoes and to really experience their suffering. Because when you call something evil, that immediately puts up a barrier. It's sort of a deliberate blindness so that you can go and exterminate that thing guilt-free. Have you noticed that nobody that you consider evil considers themselves to be evil? Not Hitler, not racists, not slave owners, not dictators, not murderers. They don't think of themselves as evil. Why? Is this an accident? No, that's this mechanism working perfectly. What people don't understand is that evil is a tool of the self, which is used against the other. So yourself uses evil, projects it onto other, because you don't want that evil to come towards you. You want to keep it at arm's distance. And of course, that other has the exact opposite perspective, or at least they can, which is why, for example, Hitler didn't consider himself to be evil. Hitler considered Jews to be evil. And he was very convinced of that. Now, people will say, well, Leo, but that's because Hitler was so deluded and he was so evil that he lost all sense of right and wrong. No, actually, Hitler didn't lose sense of right and wrong. His mechanism was functioning perfectly. He was being selfish. And he was using the concept of evil exactly how the self needs to use it. That's why it exists, for that purpose. And you're also using that mechanism now to demonize him and to demonize whoever else you like to demonize. The point of you demonizing them is so that you can maintain yourself. That's the point. That's it. So when you see yourself doing it, and you try to stop yourself from doing it, and you see how difficult that is, you will immediately understand Hitler and racists and slave owners and dictators and terrorists and all of them. The question is, how deeply do you see it within yourself? The core function of the concept of evil is to provide cover for self-biased behavior and to stop self-reflection. Because the devil only exists by virtue of the fact that he doesn't self-reflect. If he fully self-reflected, he would stop existing. Because upon full self-reflection, you realize that there is no self. And that's a rude realization. Let's talk about some of the characteristics of the devil. We already mentioned the devil works through trickery and self-deception, but this cannot be overemphasized, just how tricky and sneaky this is. As soon as the devil comes into existence, the first thing he does is he flips the script on everything. He calls up down. He calls left right. He calls right wrong. And wrong, right. He calls good, evil, and evil, good. And most importantly, he calls truth, falsehood, and falsehood, truth. Why does he do this? Because he must. Because the thing that is most threatening to the devil is the truth, with a capital T. Because the truth with a capital T is God. And God is everything. God is indiscriminate. God is without boundaries. God is infinite, which leaves no room for devils. So the devil's in trouble whenever the truth is around. So what the devil must do, his game, is to always be moving away from truth, but at the same time claiming that his falsehood and his ignorance is actually the real truth. It's an ingenious strategy for self-survival. And that's exactly what you do. That's exactly what people do. And nowhere is this more clear than in religion. Because you see, spirituality, true spirituality, is the path to ultimate truth. This means the eradication of the devil. Now, for the devil, this is a problem. So, of course, how does the devil deal with the biggest existential threat that he has in society, which is spirituality? He takes it and subverts it, corrupts it, and turns it into a tool for deepening his ignorance. And that's exactly what religion is for billions of people on the planet. It's exactly that. It's a corruption of true spirituality and mysticism to the point where the original mystics and founders of these religions, quote-unquote founders, because mystics don't find religions, it's their followers who do, their ignorant followers. See, they are demonized. The very founders' ideas and principles are all demonized and turned upside down by the devil when the devil gets a hold of this stuff. Which is why it's brilliant, you see, because you can go and pretend to be spiritual by being religious, and that makes you feel like you've got the truth now. And you can go preach, and you can go convert people, and you can go talk to people about your beliefs and about how much you believe in God and how much you believe in goodness and morality and truth and helping people and how much you believe in Jesus or the Buddha or whoever else without understanding that in so doing, you're actually being the devil. See, the devil has possessed you so thoroughly, and it's also possessed all our social institutions so thoroughly that people are born into this stuff. They don't even know what hit them. It's so sneaky. And they will deny it to the very last breath. Of course, as they must, because the devil can never admit that he's the devil. See, the devil thinks that he is separate from God. That's fundamentally what that distinction of self is. If there is no boundary between self and other, then that means everything is one. Everything's non-dual. But as we know from Christian mythology, what did Satan or Lucifer do? What's his story? He's like the fallen angel. He renounced the love of God. And he wanted to be in power himself. See, he wasn't happy with God being all-powerful. He wanted to exert his own power. He wanted to rule in his own domain. But how can the devil rule in his own domain when everything is one domain? In some way, the devil needs to create his own domain, which is like a bubble within the larger domain. So he does that by doing this separation. But the only way a separation can happen is if he forgets that he actually is God. From the very beginning. So he has to separate himself from God, and then to maintain that, he has to constantly lie and deceive not only others, but himself. Another characteristic of this devil is that he's massively arrogant. He has to be, because he has to feel like he knows, when in fact he does not. Which is why the devil uses ideology as one of his favorite tools. Any kind of ideology is basically devilry. This includes religious ideology, political ideology, economic ideology, capitalism versus communism, liberals versus conservatives, religious people versus atheists. Atheists are also devils. Agnostics are devils. Scientists are devil. It doesn't matter what your ideology is. the content of the ideology is irrelevant. The point of an ideology is to create an identity out of ideas and concepts. And also, another characteristic that's closely related to this is that the devil loves to feel like he possesses the truth exclusively. So when the devil grabs hold of this truth, he really believes it. It's because he believes it so much, and it's because he thinks that his truth is the best truth, that he then goes out, preaches, converts, and kills or threatens anyone who doesn't accept his truth. See? It's brilliant. It's just brilliant in its design, how it all works. Another characteristic of the devil is that he's outwardly oriented, materialistic, and very pragmatic. Why is that? Well, again, because if the devil ever self-reflects, he's dead. So what he has to do is he has to spend virtually all of his time in life orienting outward rather than inward. So that means the devil is preoccupied with sex, money, parties, alcohol, drugs, internet, TV, having a career, pursuing success, earning lots of money on Wall Street, getting a nice house, getting lots of cars, getting girls, getting guys. And it just goes on and on and on like this. The devil uses addiction and distraction to keep himself constantly looking away from the truth that he doesn't actually exist. And he thinks he's going to win this game, but in the end, he always loses this game because, hey, it only lasts 70, 80 years, maybe 90 years tops, and then you're dead. That water balloon that you are is going to burst. Because the truth always overpowers falsehood. See? So the devil's going to lose. It's only a question of how long until he loses. And will he recognize what he's doing and open up some room for redemption? Because see, the devil, if he really wants to, the devil can always turn inwards and realize that he's being a devil. And he can say, you know what? I'm tired of this shit. I don't want to rule over my own domain. Let me just surrender to God. And if he does that, he becomes God. The boundary between God and the devil is paper thin. In fact, it's actually non-existent from God's perspective. From the devil's perspective, it's like, Leo, God, what is God? There's no God. From the devil's perspective, of course there's no God. Or the opposite. Of course there is a God, but what you hold as the God is not really God. It's just ideas you have. It's ideology. The beauty of ideology is that it's a perfect placeholder for God. If you got ideology, whether it's science, atheism, agnosticism, theism, whatever it is, doesn't matter. It's not God, by definition, because it's limited. And so it's the perfect self-deception. This reminds me of a TV show I used to watch on HBO. It's a long time ago. Most of you probably don't remember it. It wasn't a very popular show. It was called Carnival. Some of you might remember it. That was a very interesting show. It only ran for about 2 seasons before they canceled it, but it was an interesting 2 seasons. It was set in the Depression era in the United States, and it followed these carnies, or these kind of like circus folk, who would travel around the country. They were the good guys. And the bad guy was literally the devil. This was a classic story of good versus evil. So in this fictional sort of universe that they had various spiritual powers. And what happened is that the Satan came to life and he reincarnated as a person. And so this person comes and he has this mission. Satan has this mission to take over the world with his devilry. And then the protagonist was supposed to stop him. But what I found really interesting is how they portray this devil. So he's incarnated now as a human being, And what job do you think the devil has? Of course, he's an evangelical preacher. The perfect role for Satan. And every day he gets on the radio and he talks about the beauty of God and morality and about honesty and about truth and about justice and liberty and goodness. And he's the most devout Christian you can ever imagine. And through this, he uses the radio to gather a larger and larger audience until he amasses millions of people who follow him, and he is leading them all straight to hell. That's what this show is about. And the main protagonist is supposed to stop him. What I loved about this show was that it showed that the writers had a keen intuitive sense of how the devil works. See, he works through these 180-degree reversals. You might think that the devil, because he's coming from falsehood, that he wouldn't be so bold as to go out there and have anything to do with religion. But actually, it's the exact opposite. The devil is extremely bold. He will look you straight in the face and tell you the exact opposite of what is true. And he'll believe it. And if you're not careful, he'll make you believe it. See? And of course, by he, I mean you. That's what you are. The devil is not somebody else but you. It's you. It's ingenious. It's the greatest mindfuck ever. Which starts to answer the question of why there's so much evil in the world. Because nobody wants to acknowledge this. Nobody wants to patiently watch themselves being the devil. The final characteristic of the devil is a lack of self-reflection, which I already talked about. But what's interesting is that the devil does self-reflect in some way. It's just that his self-reflection is neurotic. He has what's called neurotic self-consciousness. So the devil will feel shame. The devil can feel guilty. The devil can make himself feel bad. Some people, they don't think of themselves as good people. They think of themselves as evil people. And the people who think of themselves as evil people, those people are oftentimes very evil. Ironically. Because that's a sort of neurotic self-reflection, you see. True self-reflection would involve you being conscious of your own self-judgment, your self-criticism, and your guilt and your shame, and not being reactive to it, which most people are not conscious of. They confuse these for honest self-reflection. But these things are not anything to do with truth. These are just more tools the devil uses in order to trick himself on ever deeper layers. Now, of course, every devil must deny what I'm saying here. They must. Because if they admitted this, and they really followed the breadcrumb trail, it would lead to their demise. Which is why a lot of people hold this topic to be controversial, and they will debate with me, and they'll say this, and they'll say that, and they'll have all these rebuttals. But, just a game. That's the devil's game. He plays that game. That's just ideology. That's what ideology does. Is it goes into arguments and debates and philosophy and ethics and all this. It's a lot simpler than that. It just requires enormous self-honesty. Now, the question arises, how can a benevolent God allow for evil? If God is, as they say, infinite and all-powerful and omniscient and all-loving, why the evil? Well, of course, this question is asked from the devil's perspective. That's the problem with this question. To God, nothing is evil. To the devil, anything that threatens the devil, that's what's evil. So how does a benevolent, infinite God allow for evil? Very simply, God is everything. God is infinite. There's nothing that isn't God. God has to be everything. It's inevitable. There are no boundaries than God, which means that God must, of course, include every single boundary possible, which, of course, includes the boundary of you, the boundary of me, the boundary of your nation, the boundary of your country, the boundary of your family, all these boundaries, These are all what it means for God to be God. So God is not separate from the devil. If you think that, that's only because you're a devil. God is the devil. Duality is non-duality. From the perspective of non-duality, non-duality and duality are identical, literally identical. From the perspective of duality, there's only duality. That's the irony of this thing. God, in creating boundaries within itself, creates also ignorance. You see, infinite consciousness must also include infinite ignorance. So God is playing this game with itself. And that's what you are. That's what's conscious of me right now. That's what I am. We're one, but we think we're two. That's how it works. It's hard to wrap your mind around this unless you actually experience it for yourself. Now, some people might say, but Leo, isn't the devil bad? No, the devil isn't bad. To think the devil is bad is being more of a devil. Make sure you're not confusing what I'm saying here as any kind of imperative for how you should behave. I said nothing about whether you should or shouldn't fight Nazis, whether you should or shouldn't lock up criminals or rapists, and whether you should or shouldn't stop devils. That's not what we're discussing. We're discussing the mechanics, the really deep existential mechanics here. How you then behave, you're free to do whatever you want. And a lot of people misinterpret that. And they think that, well, Leo, what you're talking about here is moral relativism, which means that we don't stop the Nazis when the tanks come rolling through our streets. And then that's bad for everybody. No, that's only bad for you as a self. Hating the devil and hating evil is just more evil. People think they can stop evil by hating it, by condemning it, by criticizing it. No, you can't. You just add more to it. That's why we're focused not on actions, because actions are external. Actions are already deceptions of the devil. The devil will feed you with ideas of like, well, but Nazis and terrorists, we got to stop them all. They're going to threaten me. Yeah, they're going to threaten you. That's the whole point. You're so preoccupied with saving yourself that you will commit all manner of evil to do it. Which is the tragedy we have. It's the tragedy of the commons. Everybody is afraid of everybody else, and therefore everybody is perpetrating evil upon everybody else. And that's the only reason evil exists. So I'm not telling you that you need to be a goody two-shoes. I'm not saying that devil is bad. I'm not saying you should stop being a devil. I just want you to become conscious of the fact that you are a devil. Without necessarily doing anything about it, just become conscious. Just by the fact that you become conscious, watch what happens then. Your behavior will start to change in very interesting ways. Okay, let's take a quick intermission here. Don't go anywhere. I'll be back in a second. All right, let's talk about how to stop evil. What do you got to do there? First, you have to recognize very deeply that seeing evil in others does not solve evil, but in fact creates the evil which you seek to stop. The solution to evil is to see it within yourself. To see that you're the devil. It's very easy to see other people as devils. The hardest thing is to admit to yourself that you're the devil. Notice that trying to rid the world of evil only creates more evil. That's the trap. That's the trap that 99% of people do not understand. Thereby, they go and create more evil. Condemning evil is antithetical to truth, because in truth, evil doesn't exist. It's a concept. It's a projection. There are two facets to evil. One is the facet of not doing evil yourself, eliminating selfish actions, in other words. The other facet that people overlook is the seeing of evil in the world. So if you want to stop doing evil actions, you also have to stop seeing evil. Because in order to see evil, you must project evil, therefore you create evil. This is where people get stuck. They don't think they create evil by seeing it. But of course you do, because evil is a concept. But most people don't realize that evil is a concept. The truth is that there can be no such thing as evil, because everything is non-dual, everything is one, everything is infinitely interconnected. So who are you calling evil? Whatever you call evil is actually you. The question is, do you realize it or not? See, when you see that everything is you and that there are no boundaries, then it makes no more sense to call things evil, because you'd be calling yourself evil. And what's the point of attaching a label or a concept to something which just is itself? The label adds nothing to it. The label only has a practical value if you somehow separate yourself from the other who you're attaching the label to. Then it does some kind of work. But once you see through that, then you don't need it to do that kind of work anymore. The tragedy of evil is that in trying to stop it, you create it. This is very difficult for people to understand. They tend to think like, well, but some stuff, Leo, it really is evil. Like, the Nazis really are evil. We need to stop them. And in trying to stop the Nazis, we don't create Nazis. Well, actually, you do. Actually, you do. It's interesting, actually, because in World War II, when the Allies were fighting the Nazis and the Americans were fighting the Nazis, there was a whole propaganda ministry in the U.S. here, and they made posters. You can go Google and look at some of those posters where they actually demonized Nazis, drew them with, like, fangs, literally like a demon. Why did they do that? Because creating this idea or this story of evil helps to rally people around your cause, and then it's easier to get them to go do some kind of action. And especially if the action you want them to do is to kill other human beings, to bomb them, to burn them, to torture them, to shoot them, then you got to demonize them. Because you know what it turns out? It turns out that human beings don't like killing other human beings when they see that that human being is just like them. That creates way too much cognitive dissonance. See? Now, the objection that comes up here is, of course, people say, but Leo, if we don't stop the Nazis, then they're going to come here and they're going to take over and they're going to kill us all. And then the world will be ruled by Nazis. Is that what you're advocating? Of course not. What I'm advocating is understanding the mechanics of calling things evil and seeing evil in the world and co-creating evil with your mind. If you want to stop the Nazis, you can stop the Nazis without calling them evil. You don't need to print posters of demon Nazis in order to fight Nazis. But there's even a deeper point. And this is one that people just do not want to hear, which is that if Nazis roll through your town and they want to kill you and your family and destroy your nation, then that might happen. See, the problem is that people are so focused on self-defense, being an ego, that they lose sight of the truth. They only tend to care about the truth when it serves them. But see, in this case, usually what people will say is, well, if we have to fudge things, you know, if we had to print some posters with Nazi demons on them, that's okay. That's just part and parcel of fighting the Nazis. Sometimes we got to do that. We got to fudge the truth a little bit in order to survive, to thrive, to live, to reproduce, to maintain our values. And my point is not that that's wrong or right. My point is exactly. That's what the ego does. It defends itself at all costs, regardless of truth. It doesn't care about the truth. It cares about survival, and survival is falsehood. But the problem is that you're so attached to survival that you can't see the value of truth for truth's sake. Because you're asking the question from a perspective of the ego, which only cares about survival. So the ego is always going to ask, well, Leah, what's the point of truth if it doesn't help me to survive and to thrive? And what that is that's exactly what the devil does. It works in that way. That's the mechanism of the devil. Maybe to access the truth, you have to die. Maybe that's how reality works. But you'll never know if all you care about is survival. And what benefits the truth might bring you, you'll never know, because all you care about is survival. You see the catch-22 here? Also notice that the desire to end evil is itself selfish. The only reason you really care about stopping evil is because it disturbs you. And why does it disturb you? Because it threatens your ability to be an ego. So really, the reason that you are opposed to selfishness in others is because, very ironically, it tends to thwart your own selfishness. And what you want to do is you want to reserve the right to be as selfish as you can possibly be. Therefore, you need to preempt the selfishness of others. It's because you want to be the biggest devil that you are afraid of devils. See, the problem with being a devil is that you have competition. Yeah, you see, you're not the only devil. If you were the only devil in town, well, you could feel great. You just run around doing your devil stuff and no problem. But the problem is, of course, is that there's always bigger devils. Where does it end? It seems like you can have infinite degrees of devilness. So be careful about misinterpreting everything I'm saying here as a demand that you be a good person. The demand to be a good person plays into what the devil is doing. The problem is not good versus evil. The problem is the dichotomy. The fact that you even drew a line between the two, that's the problem. People think that, no, Leo, if I just go be good, that will take care of the evil. No, it won't. It won't, because you're creating the dichotomy. In doing that, you're creating the dichotomy. You're literally creating it. It's only after you see, really deeply see what I'm talking about here, that a solution to evil really presents itself. Human beings have been fighting evil for thousands of years. Have you ever wondered how come it hasn't been vanquished? Maybe it's because the way that human beings intuitively want to fight evil is by becoming good. And they think that's going to do it. It's not going to do it. Because the solution is deeply counterintuitive. It's perhaps the most counterintuitive thing there is. It's turning against yourself. The solution to evil, if you really care to stop it, is to acknowledge that you are the devil yourself. To deeply see that. To see all the ways in which you do it. And this is not something that you just admit in 5 minutes or from watching this episode. This will require months and years of patient self-observation, seeing how you behave like a devil in an objective way, without guilting yourself. So that's step number one. Step number two is committing to truth for truth's sake. Committing to consciousness for consciousness's sake, and setting that as your highest priority rather than your own pleasure or your own survival. And step number three is surrendering to the truth, even if it means the death of you. And this means dropping all your opinions, all your judgments, and all your ideology about life, and especially about good and evil. And now you can really appreciate why nobody does this. Who on earth would take this deal up? Who on earth would pursue truth for truth's sake at the cost of the self, if your very existence is at stake? Your ego is not fucking around. Your very existence is at stake here. Even though the ego is conceptual, it doesn't feel conceptual. It feels physical. So when you really understand what I'm saying here, you will realize that this, what I'm saying, seems very idealistic, perhaps, to you. Precisely because what you're being asked to do is to surrender everything pragmatic, your entire life, to truth, without really knowing where that's going to lead you. And you have a lot to lose. You have your whole life to lose here, potentially, in this bargain. So, of course, you don't want to make this bargain. You want to stay being a devil. And I don't blame you. 99.99999% of people on Earth make the same choice. But once you see this, at least you'll understand why they make the choice and why you make the choice. You see, it's not about demonizing people. I'm not here to demonize devils. I am just trying to expose the mechanics of how this works. If you want, you can eliminate all the world's evil simply by turning inward. That's all that's required. You don't need to fight Nazis or terrorists or any of that. Solve the problem of evil in yourself. How do you solve this problem of evil? Is it by restraining yourself from having sex and stealing money and chasing houses and cars and this sort of stuff? No, not at all. It's by erasing the self. Erase this boundary of the self that you have drawn. And then what will happen is ego death. You will realize the truth of no self. That is enlightenment. That is awakening. Once you awaken, then you'll realize that nothing can be evil, because you'll see that evil is just a projection, a story in your mind. And if that happens, then, of course, the devil has been redeemed and has become God. By surrendering yourself to truth, that is the only way the devil can be purified of himself. The devil doesn't have the power to purify himself because he's not real. The devil must turn to the source. The source is God. Turn to God's light. God's light will purify you and burn the devil out of you. Now, of course, this sounds nicer than it actually feels in real life, because don't forget that the devil here is you. And now imagine that you are the vampire who is thrown out in the midday sun, and he's burned by the light. The light burns you, it scalds you, it pains you, it's emotionally scarring, it's difficult. And as a vampire, it's not easy to say to all your vampire friends, you know what, guys, I am going to go walk out during the midday sun right in the middle of town square, and I'm just going to sit there and lounge around in the sun. See, no, to vampires, that doesn't work. because that means their death. But of course, what the vampires don't realize is that if they actually did do that, after the devil in them has been purified, what remains is God. And that's a really beautiful thing if you ever get to experience it. Now, don't make the mistake of thinking that just because you're post-ego death, that now your body can't be harmed. So, by going through this awakening, you will eliminate evil forever in all the world. But your body can still be harmed. See, people have this silly notion of what it means to eliminate evil in the world. They think that to eliminate evil in the world, what has to happen is we have to stop all the violence, stop all the theft, stop all the rape. But see, that stuff was never evil. To eliminate evil in the world, what has to happen is you have to eliminate the concept of evil, stop projecting it, and also stop doing it. You can easily, well, not that easily, but you can stop doing a lot of it yourself once you become conscious enough, but also you're going to stop creating it by stopping seeing it. Now, of course, people will say, well, Leo, that's just semantics. You're just playing some word games, because what you're basically saying is that your version of eliminating evil in the world is just for me to stop thinking that things are evil. But in fact, I can still get killed. My daughter can still get raped, and my nation can still get attacked by a foreign power, and there could be a nuclear war. And you're right. All of that stuff can happen. But you know what? It can happen anyways. You can't prevent any of that stuff, really. You can fight it and fight it and fight it, but it's still going to be there. We've been fighting violence with violence for thousands of years, and guess what? We still have lots of violence, and we still will for many, many centuries to come. The trick is not to stop violence. The trick is to understand what it's about, and also to stop being so defensive to the point where you're not offended if violence is done to you. Not that you go seeking out violence, not that you want to become a victim, not that you want to give people license to abuse you. No, not at all. But you want to disidentify with all the material stuff in life, including your physical body and your mind and all your ideas and all your beliefs. And once you're detached from that, then you're not going to care so much about what happens with the body and with your life. Because no matter what happens, your body is still always in jeopardy. Your mind is always in jeopardy, and they will die. That's their nature. They're temporary. That's a game you can never win. But what you can do is you can realize that you're not them. And by doing this disidentification, now you're set free. And you're not worried anymore. And literally, this is how the problem of evil is solved. It's counterintuitive. Because it's fundamentally a conceptual problem, but mistaken as a physical problem. Now, to really bring all of this home to you, I want to help you to do this imagination exercise. This really helps me to reconcile evil for myself. So what I want you to do is I want you to imagine that right now you're living life as this particular being that you are, or that you think you are. You have this particular perspective. You're this human being who was born, you were given this name, and here you are alive. But now I want you to imagine that from the universe's perspective, from God's perspective, there are all these billions upon billions and trillions of other creatures and other beings alive all over the universe. And even though right now you just feel like you're one of these perspectives, I want you to take God's perspective and to see that as God, you will inhabit every single one of those perspectives of all those creatures. And I really want you to imagine this. So imagine, for example, that a couple hundred years ago, you were alive as a slave. And you were beaten and worked until you died. And then you were hung. And that was your fate. Really imagine that. Live through that. Not as some other person's life, but as your life. You lived through that. And now imagine yourself as a concentration camp victim. You and your family were all rounded up and put into these concentration camps. You were starved, you were beaten, you were tortured, and ultimately you were led into ovens and you were burned. And as you were being gassed and burned in these ovens, your fingerprints were clawing at the concrete walls of this gas chamber. And that was your life. That was your perspective. Not as some other, but this is you. You're living through that. And now imagine that you had a family, you had a nice daughter that you loved, perhaps you were the mother or the father, and that she was raped. And you lived through that. And imagine that you were the mother and the father, and also the daughter herself, and you were raped. And see how that feels. And now imagine that you are a family living in the Middle East, someplace like Iraq or Afghanistan, just a regular farming family, let's say, or a merchant family, and your entire house was blown up at a drone strike because, hey, some mistaken military intelligence thought that you were harboring some terrorists. You weren't, but they thought maybe you were, so they decided that it's better to take you out. So they took out your entire compound, your entire house, and your entire family and yourself was killed. So imagine that that's your life. You lived through that. Now also imagine that you're an ant crawling along the sidewalk. And some little kid is running to get his ice cream cone during the summer. And as he's running towards his ice cream cone, very excited to get his ice cream cone, what does he do? He just steps on you. He doesn't see you because you're this little ant and he's this big kid. And he just steps on you and squishes you. Now imagine being that ant getting squished on. And notice what that feels like. Imagine that you're a pack mule, perhaps in the ancient Roman times, and you're working to lug giant stones and stuff for building public works. And as a pack mule, they just work you to death. They barely feed you. They barely give you water. They leave you out in the cold. They don't care about you. And eventually, you starve to death from being overworked and malnourished. And imagine what it's like to be that pack mule. That's your whole life. Or imagine that you're a big cat on safari, like a lion. And some businessman from Wall Street from the U.S. flies over on safari in Africa and shoots you. And that's the end of your life. Imagine you lived through that. You didn't even know what hit you. You were just laying there on the rocks, basking in the sun, and then you get a bullet through your heart. Or imagine that you're a pig in a factory farm where you were born and raised. You didn't even see the light of day. You never even saw the sun or grass. You were just raised in this kind of metal warehouse. And you were given a little tiny space that you can barely circle around in. And you just lived there in your own feces amongst all your other pig friends. And then you were butchered for food. And that's your whole life. That's your existence. That's you. Imagine that. These kind of exercises are really helpful to see the other side that the devil doesn't want you to see. The part that people don't realize is that since you are God, and since God is one, and since there is nothing else outside of God, that means every single life and every single perspective that ever was and ever will be is identical to you, in the sense that you will experience all of them and you actually already have. You just don't have a memory of it. See, right now, the only reason you can be so complacent about all the evil in the world is because you're sitting there, you're living in a first world country, probably, if you're watching me, and you have a very cushy lifestyle now in the 21st century. Even if you're struggling in life, you still have an extremely cushy lifestyle. And still you whine and you bitch and you moan and you complain. But you don't realize that you literally were the slaves. You were the concentration camp victims. You were all these butchered animals. Not only were you them, but you were also their abusers. You were Hitler. You were Stalin. You were the terrorists. You're all of them. Because there's no boundaries. That's what non-duality means. But when you are conscious of that, really conscious of it, not just as a thought experiment, but you're actually conscious of it, can you start to see how that might change your behavior? Not in a moralistic sense of like, oh, you shouldn't eat meat, or you shouldn't do that, or you shouldn't harm people. No, 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 not at that level. At a much, much deeper level. Where you realize the oneness of it all. I want you to spend the next week living your life consciously reminding yourself that everyone you interact with, from your parents to the people at your work to the ants that you see on the sidewalk, that all of them are you. And that you're living as all those perspectives. You just don't have access to it through your current memory. Because what it means to be you is to not have memory of those things. See? And notice what difference that makes in your life. Just observe. What you'll find is that you start to walk through the world very lightly, very carefully. Because you just naturally then don't want to inflict unnecessary suffering on other beings. And that's ultimately what spirituality boils down to. Once you become conscious of that interconnection of everything, then you start to act like it. But you have to be careful not to put the cart before the horse. Don't start to act like it if you don't really feel it. Because that leads to actually more devilry. When you start telling yourself how you're supposed to feel and how you're supposed to act, you have to actually do the work, do the consciousness work. Start with this exercise. Take it seriously. Don't take it as just an exercise. Don't say, oh, well, Leo, you're just talking about reincarnation. That's some sort of Hindu concept. No, no, I'm not. This is not a concept. You literally have experienced what it's like to be every single human that was ever alive and that is currently alive and that will ever be alive. You just don't have access to it as a self right now. Shocking, but that's non-duality. When you realize that, that will show you the way out. The way out of your devilry. It's only after you try to stop being selfish, try to stop being a self, and fail at it over and over and over and over again, struggle with this consciousness work for years, falling off track, getting back on track, falling off track, getting back on track, only then will you really start to appreciate why so much evil exists in the world. Because you'll have an appreciation for how difficult it is to exercise the demon from within you. And then, of course, you'll be much more sympathetic towards the challenges that other people face in exercising their own demons. Do you want unconditional love and tranquility in your life? Are you sure? Are you really sure? then surrender all notions of evil forever. That's the price you got to pay. With enlightenment comes the corollary that you will never be able to criticize or condemn anyone ever again for any action whatsoever, including the most heinous and disgusting actions you can possibly imagine. Because all these condemnations and criticisms are fundamentally false. So if you really want to be conscious, if you want to be as enlightened as possible, then you're going to have to drop all these criticisms. And that's something people really hate to admit. It's like, Leo, I'll do anything. I'll be good, but just let me keep my ability to criticize and demonize others. Just let me have that. It feels so good. I'm so addicted to it. I love it so much. It's so important. Leo, if I don't have that, how am I going to stop all the evil stuff in the world? That's how the devil thinks. But hopefully now you have enough of the theoretical foundation to see why this is so misguided and why it actually is a catch-22 that circles back around and creates the very thing that it tries to stop. All right, that's it. I'm done here. Please click that like button for me. Don't forget. And come check out actualize.org. This is my website. Check out my blog. Check out the forum. Check out the Life Purpose course. Check out the book list. And make sure that you stick around for more in the future.